Welcome to Gardens for Everybody. Elizabeth and I are here to interview and chat to David Hill, the councillor for West Barrhaven.
Hello, ladies.
Hi, David. Thank you so much for making the time. I know you're very, very busy.
It's my pleasure.
We wanted to just ask you a few general questions and obviously a little bit, you know, garden environmental focus, because that's what we're into. But first of all, what inspired you to run for office?
Well, I don't know if so much inspiration as it was, you know, my place in life at the time when Jan Harder announced she wasn't going to be running for office again. She was the city councillor here for about 25 years, really a staple in the community, and left some pretty big shoes to fill. And I think when she made the announcement that she wasn't running again, a lot of the community organizations and boards kind of looked around and said, you know, what are we going to do? We've just kind of depended on Jan forever. We need to find somebody. And at that time for me, I had been living here in Barrhaven for about 5 or 6 years. And just as a result of, you know, my involvement in the community, mostly through my kids' activities, you know, they were involved in sports. So I got involved in some coaching, and then I got involved in managing the outdoor rinks. And then we got involved in our local church, the Barrhaven United Church. And through that, I got involved with the multi-faith housing and the Haven, low-income housing development here in Barrhaven. And then through that, I also got involved with Veterans House. And so just kind of organically, through a lot of things that were happening in the community and happened to touch upon me and my life, I got quite involved in a lot of these different community activities, mostly because as a military family, we really had craved growing roots in a community, because oftentimes you can't do that. And that's difficult when you're moving year after year after year. You know, you meet some friends and then you got to pack up and leave your friends. And then you meet new friends and then you pack up and leave those friends. And so I think this was our 7th or 8th move. And I think, you know, we had young children, McKenna and Casey. They were, you know, 7, 8 at the time when we first got here. And we said, you know what, we just want to get involved. We want to get involved in the youth activities and the sports and the church and the community. And that's where we found ourselves when all of a sudden there was a couple nudges. And it's like, hey, the city councilor is going to be not running again. And, you know, you're well organized. You've been quite involved in the community. You've got, you know, your military experience. And, you know, would you consider doing this? And it was never really a goal of mine to get into elected office, but I very much enjoyed my time in uniform. I served 25 years in the military. And during that time, I was either training for operations or I was deployed on operations. And an operation is kind of like what being a city councilor is. You know, you've got lots of stuff going on in the community and you just try and deal with it as best you can. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, doing that during flooding operations or forest fire operations or overseas and peacekeeping and combat operations, you know, why should I, you know, privilege that kind of thing over if my community has a gap and needs something like that? So that's really how I ended up falling into this.
Well, we're really glad that you settled in Barrhaven and
obviously living here.
It's a good community and we're really happy that someone's representing us and looking after our interests. So thank you. So what are your main goals or concerns that you have for Barrhaven that you'd like to achieve over your term?
Yeah, so, you know, I bring a very much kind of a mission focus and a common sense approach to my roles and responsibilities as a city councillor. We haven't really taken a big ideological approach to anything. We've simply said, what are the things in the community that we need to do? Like, how can we steward our money well? We raise a certain amount of money through taxes, and we need to spend that money on certain programs across the city in order to get the best value for the community. How can we do that in an appropriate way? And I would take my own family's perspective on, you know, how I manage my finances. You know, I draw revenue. I have to spend a little bit of money on car insurance. I need to spend a bit of money on food. I need to spend some money on our mortgage. I need to put some money into, you know, our children's education and to savings. And some months you have unexpected expenses that pop up and you never know when you need to pay for a Lansdowne or you need to pay for for something that's going on, you know. But generally speaking, I take a prudent and kind of a moderate approach to, you know, making sure that we're doing the core businesses and we're doing that as well as we can. And then where there are opportunities to look at other things, maybe we can do some pilot programs. But generally speaking, I'm trying to stick to a fairly moderate program that, you know, allows people to stretch their paychecks and the money that they make every month. Because I recognize that not everybody sees their wages going up. People are really stretched. There's a full spectrum of where people sit on the economic line. You know, I care about everybody on that. And we need to make sure that we're building opportunities for prosperity through good paying jobs, through, you know, good solid economic fundamentals in the community so that people can live and work and play and enjoy the community and have a good quality of life. But we need to make sure that we're not just looking at things today, but we're looking at things 10 years out. We're looking at things 20 and 30 years out. And that's why things like our zoning bylaws are going to become very important. That's why our year-over-year municipal tax charges and how we prioritize certain types of programming and what we do and don't consider to be ratepayer revenues versus taxpayer revenues. They're difficult decisions, but my general perspective would be we want to try and focus on core business as much as possible and not burden taxpayers because they're already extremely burdened in this day and time.
I guess that leans into the next question, which is, you know, we obviously are interested in the food cupboard in Barrhaven, growing food for that. And so I'm wondering what you see as the value of the food cupboard and, you know, the need for it in our community right now.
So all good things come through grassroots organizations, and the Barrhaven Food Cupboard is a very good example of that. This wasn't a program that the city imposed on the community. This was something that grew out of a need that was seen, started in the basement of the Barrhaven United Church. And then as the need grew, the opportunity to move into a bit of a larger warehousing environment here at the Walter Baker took stock. And even now, I know that there's a demand that goes beyond the capacity that currently exists for the Barrhaven Food Cupboard, which, you know, at its core is a bad thing. We don't want to have the Barrhaven food cupboard.
Yeah.
We don't want it, but we need it, and it is appreciated, and it is necessary. But if it could go out of business tomorrow, that would make all of us happy, and I think we would all celebrate that.
Yeah, totally.
And certainly, you know, I don't think any of us are naive enough to think that the market's ever going to go away for the need for the Barrhaven food cupboard. But certainly, what I would like to see is, you know, from a municipal perspective, and then I advocate to the other levels of government, I want to see the economic fundamentals invested in our community such that we can at least stabilize where people are at and not see crisis growth numbers, you know, 10% increases and beyond year over year over year.
Yeah,
because it's not sustainable, but it's also, it's just not healthy. And we need to make sure that we're looking at the long-term health of the community.
Yeah, I totally agree. So semi-related, are there any projects that you'd like to see going on in terms of the environment within Barrhaven?
Interestingly enough, I was actually just at a really interesting meeting yesterday that talked about invasive species. And I'm quite interested in that because I think there are places where we can find some synergies. And certainly that's a place that I think the city could probably do a better job. And certainly I'll do my best to ask questions to see if we can. But for example, the city runs twice a year a Clean Up the Capital program.
Mm-hmm.
And volunteer groups, individuals, families, hockey teams, the Legion, lots of different groups or individuals can sign up to do that. I used to do that regularly with my family. We would take the park right next to it. We would do that. And more recently, I know I've gone out with some of the community associations and such to do that. So that's one program the city runs. At the same time, there is an Adopt a Park program as well, which is kind of connected in some ways because if you adopt a park, then when Clean Up the Capital comes, you're probably going to clean up that park. But they're not completely connected. And then to go a little bit in a different direction, but I'm going to circle it back in a minute, we have an outdoor rink program. And the outdoor rink program sees the city giving a certain amount of money to the community associations in order to help with the operations costs for managing outdoor rinks. You know, gasoline for the snowblowers, buying some shovels, having a pizza day for the people that come out and flood the rink, that kind of thing. Well, I think there's probably a world where we could take, for example, volunteers who are very interested, engaged, and understanding and knowledgeable about invasive species and connect that knowledge to the organizations that already exist, whether it's community associations, folks that have adopted parks, folks that are doing Clean Up the Capital, and link some of that together. Mm-hmm. So maybe there could be some resource and funding, but at the same time, there's an existing infrastructure that we're leveraging in order to bring together some good for the community in a geographic area, in a certain park and such. Starting from scratch on new projects is always tough because you got to get the buy-in, you got to get the governance, you got to get the processes, you got to get the people. This is why I think, you know, again, using the invasive species example, we don't need to start a new program to do stuff there. Maybe there's some new programs that could come with it, but there is existing infrastructure in the city that we could use to build on the concepts of what our concerns are and what we could potentially do at, I think, a reasonable cost. Mm-hmm. So that's one example. What other things? I've worked on some pollinator motions as well. A couple of years ago, I had a motion about leveraging transit spaces to include some pollinator garden options.
That
got kind of folded into a motion that one of my colleagues did about right-of-ways. And so leveraging rights-of-way in order to have a little bit more exposure to native plant systems and pollinator-friendly plant systems.
Yes.
Yeah, those are a couple that come to mind off the top of my head.
No, that's really good. I think the invasive thing is something that a lot of people aren't truly aware of, you know, when they're buying plants, for instance, what's invasive. So I'm glad that the city and you in particular are looking at that, and increasing the habitat for pollinators is so important. So these are very dear to us too. That sounds great. And so it sounds like you're interested in gardening or the environment. Do you do any gardening yourself?
You know what? I'm not a great gardener, but you know what? I think I'm cut from that cloth, though. Like, I'll call myself a close cousin to the gardeners because I'm an outdoor rink aficionado.
Right. That's and a lot of work.
It is a lot of work, but you know what? It's not a lot of work because I don't see it as work.
Right,
I see it as very relaxing. There's something very calming about going out in the winter and shoveling, or going out in the winter and spraying and making your ice.
I'm not sure, because that sounds like middle of the night, extremely cold work.
Both of those are involved, but the connection to gardening is that it's kind of like that too. You know, either you really enjoy it, you like getting out there and you start shaking when you see a thorn or a weed in the middle of the lawn that's not supposed to be there, or you see that your garden is not looking as healthy as it could, or there's some bugs in there that shouldn't be. It's the same for me in the winter on my rink. I get antsy when there's a little blemish and I'll go out there with my blaze torch in the middle of the night and I'll clean it off. Just because I enjoy doing that.
That does not sound appealing to me at all, honestly. I think I'll stick with gardening. Do you have a garden yourself?
I do. We have a small flower garden in the front of our home here. And I've gone through, as I said, in the military, I've moved many, many times. And so we've gone through different iterations, from having a vegetable garden to having a flower garden to having, you know, some perennials. Right now, it's mostly just perennials and some bushes, because from a maintenance perspective, that's the easiest thing for our family.
Sounds like you don't have a lot of time right now.
I don't, but I do enjoy investing in that, because, you know, going out with my hose, and I like to shut my brain off and do a bit of manual work. It's very satisfying, you know, to do that. And I think it's healthy for everybody to do that. And I think that's why I enjoy my outdoor rink. But, you know, I've gone through various phases of it. I mean, here in Barrhaven, I don't know what I'm going to do with my backyard yet. And I've been in my house right now for, I don't know, 6 or 7 years. But I keep saying I'm going to do a raised bed, small vegetable garden. Like, I'd really like to do some peppers.
Yeah, nice. Peppers are very popular in the food cupboard garden.
Yeah.
Very popular.
Yeah, no, my brother does lots of peppers and beans and such. I would like to do them just because I like to harvest them and it's fun. But I haven't got around to it because I have a big hedge in my backyard that I really am taking a lot of care with, because it's got some damage. And all of my neighbors around me, and it's not me blaming my neighbors, but all of my neighbors around me have some form of like a shed or, you know, a big tree or something that's causing shading onto the hedge. And so I kind of feel like I'm bearing a bit of the burden here, but I need to kind of protect my hedge and allow it the sunlight, because if I don't allow it the sunlight, then it's going to get badly hurt.
It's a cedar hedge.
It is. Yeah.
Marianne was saying that an important thing to do at this time of year to protect your cedar hedge is to water it well, so it's got a really good water in the root system before the winter comes.
Well, that's good to know.
Starting in the middle of August, late August, you need to put 2.5 centimeters or 1 inch of water every week.
Okay. Noted.
Until the soil freezes.
Okay. Well, we got some good rain last night.
That helped.
Do you have any concerns about watering right now? You see varying types of reports in the media right now about, you know, certain places, be careful with water and such. Are there concerns for people that are on municipal water? I haven't heard that, but you would know probably better than I would.
I mean, I think we always want to use water conservation when we're gardening, and that's very important to us at my house and also in the food cupboard garden. So we definitely want to make sure that we're reducing moisture losses by using mulch as much as possible. So I definitely think sometimes people water when it's raining, or they water when it's not necessary, or maybe they water sprinkles and not deeply enough, which is also not good use of the water.
Soaker hoses are optimum because you can put them on at night and they're just soaking the soil.
But I mean, I guess if you, especially with vegetables, they will need water. So if we have a drought, as we did, then you really need watering once a week.
Yeah. But you don't have any concerns with the Ottawa Municipal?
Oh, you mean the quality of the water?
No. I'm talking about the... Over the last few weeks, they've said in certain parts of the rural areas or on well water, you know, you need to be a little bit more careful with your water usage.
I think that applies. No, I think it's more well water that's going to run low.
All Canadians should be aware that we do not replenish the water that we use. The water we have in Canada is glacial, so it's 20,000 years old in our lakes and rivers. When it rains, we do not get enough rain to refill the lakes.
Yeah.
So we do need to always, no matter how close we are to a lake, water judiciously.
Yeah.
it's valuing it and not taking it for granted is important. Yep.
Allowing the aquifers to recharge. We need to water conscientiously.
Well, this has been great. Thank you very much. I can see how busy you are, so I'm really grateful for the time that you gave us.
It's my pleasure.
And we'll let you know when we put the podcast up. Thank you, everyone, for listening to Gardens for Everybody, and please subscribe.
Thank you, David.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to join you ladies today. Thank you.